Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win.
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on an unseasonably warm November morning. I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's a great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. I mean, I think the bus has shrunk from its previous 5 mile wide, 10 mile long state that we had.
Not recognizable.
From last podcast. Yeah. Now it's more of a monstrosity than glorious. But, you know, we're going to hope that we get the glory back tonight. I think tonight we're playing Utah, right? I should probably know this.
No, tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow?
I think it's tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't it weird to have such a long streak of no games and, you know, 10 games into the year?
Yeah.
11 games into the year.
I knew Utah was the next game, and I'm just like, because it's I shouldn't say very rare, but usually you don't see Sunday night games. So I'm like, oh, it's just got to be Saturday. But apparently, you're right, it's tomorrow. I've now pulled up ESPN. I stand corrected.
And then they suddenly have like 5 games in 7 days. I don't know. You think they could have spread it out a little bit better. That said, I take full responsibility for this losing streak because I guess I was the impetus to getting Marquet back on X. And we're 1-5 since he rejoined X. He's like, I love the guy, but he's the turd in the punch bowl in terms of Bulls discourse right now. And 1-5 since he came back. That one win felt like an accident, you know, basically when we beat Philadelphia. I blame myself. I really checked that group chat we have what is that platform? I always forget. WhatsApp. On WhatsApp that we have. So I think I went it's funny because I'll go like 3 days without checking it and all of a sudden I got all these insane takes from Mark. And then I think that forced him to go on X. And I feel like, you know, he's kind of like Kylo Ren. I'm Luke. I'm trying to bring him back into the light and it's not working. So I take full responsibility. That's the reason why the team was not the last couple of weeks.
I don't think that's why. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think.
You sure?
Yeah. I don't think the Bulls record is related to you, Mark, or anyone's socks, you know, or whatever other oddball shit people come up with.
I don't know. You never know.
No, I mean, I think I do kind of know, but okay, move along.
Let's get into the reason why we've lost 4 in a row. And your big reasons behind that. Like, I will say the Pistons game was the really only game out of the 4 losses that I was really disappointed in. All the other games, we were very competitive against good teams and playoff teams. Some of those teams like the Cavs may be challenging for a title. And we had leads in those games, some of them large, and we blew it down the stretch, which is normal when you're missing your two best clutch players your two best players, period, in terms of Kobe White and Josh Giddey. But your thoughts on this recent four-game losing streak?
I mean, I think I agree mostly with what you said there. Though, to be fair, we weren't missing Josh Giddey for all of those games, right?
He was just Cleveland. That's right.
For 2 of those games.
But so. He was half the man he used to be due to the ankle injury, literally.
All right. Yeah, I guess maybe get a laugh out of me. So I guess maybe you could say that impacted 3 of the 4. So I guess that's a pretty good amount. You know, the San Antonio one was disappointing only because like we had it right. Like you were up until the end, and like just watching the end of the game, I'm like, we're gonna lose this. Like we're up by 6, but like every offensive possession just looked like it was a disaster. And we just happened to score on some of them anyway, on like crazy bailout shots and everything San Antonio was doing on the other end. It's like they're missing, but they're missing really good looks. And you're just like, this is not going to go well. Like you can just see the momentum of the different types of shots each team is getting. And you're like, maybe we'll get lucky, but you can't just keep taking really hard shots and beating a team taking really easy shots. And we lost. And that was just hard only because we almost had it, and there's no reason we should have won that game, right? They should have just crushed us. So I'm not sad that
team.
They're a better team, especially with the lineups out there. They're a way better team. But it was just disappointing because, you know, we had kind of got to the end, and had an excellent chance to win, and it just didn't happen. The Detroit one, I agree with you, was the only one going into it where you're like, we should win this game, and then we lost, and that one was quite disappointing. The rest of them, you know, I don't know. And like Detroit's got a great record, but if you weren't paying attention, it was like they're missing, I don't know, it's like six of their top 10 players or something, including Cade. And, you know, so it's like they're missing basically the entire roster. You know, they're throwing a G League roster out there, and we were missing Kobe and we were missing Giddy. So, and of course Collins. So we also weren't throwing out a great roster, but you know, you kind of felt like as a team that's supposed to have all this depth, we would have been able to do something, but it really highlights like how little defense we had in that game, right? We could not protect the rim at all. And what's interesting about that to me is I feel like there's this book out now on the Bulls, which no one should be surprised of, but it's like they cannot protect the rim. And I'm going to be interested to see now how that, you know, like how that works going forward, because, you know, Detroit with not really great players just exploited the fact that we have nothing in the front court to protect the rim. And I'm going to see how better teams now look at us. So, you know, our offense is able to do okay, but if you give up, like, I think it was like, I was saying that game, it was like 50-something% from the field, and you know, you can't let a team shoot like 53%, 54% from the field against you. You're just not going to win those games. You know, like 3-point shooting is a lot of luck and has a lot of variance, but you know, regular field goal percentage, if someone's shooting over 50% from the field, that's just bad defense. You know, you can't control if someone just has hot shooting nights, but you know, people are just getting to the rim all the time and getting those easy shots. That's just bad defense. And so, you know, not a surprise, right? Like we knew that was a challenge coming into the season. It's a bigger challenge. Collins out. You know, hopefully looks like we're going to get like all these guys back pretty soon. And it'll be interesting to see what the team looks like when everyone is healthy.
Yeah. So let's bookmark this for later. The talk about their interior defense. Cause we're going to get into discussions about rumors about trading for AD. Let's not talk about that yet. I will just say that was some of the worst interior defense I've ever seen from a Bulls team in that game. I mean, it was a layup line. The second quarter specifically, and you can go on my X account, I highlighted 7 plays, which were all baskets at the rim with the exception of one. And all the Pistons were doing were just targeting Jones and Vooch. They were playing a game of essentially, who's Vooch on? Let's have that guy set a pick. And, you know, whoever Vooch is guarding, and then he won't be able to keep up with him. And I was really disappointed in Trey Jones. I thought his defense was horrific in that second quarter. And you could see some of those plays that were highlighted there. I got into a conversation online with Mo Banks, and who's a great dude. I love the guy. But for whatever reason, he just hates Okoro. Probably after the first 2 games when he didn't play well. And he was saying that Trey Jones is our best defender. And basically, I think his argument was that he can, you know, he has a lot of steals, and that's great about Trey. He's also like 165 pounds or 175 pounds, somewhere in that range. And he is just too small to really be a great navigator of screens. He just can't do it. And I kind of foresee this continually to go on. And to me, it leads to the question, like when Kobe comes back, who goes to the bench? It's got to be Trey. It just has to be. He thinks he's a better defender than Okoro. I would say it really doesn't matter what you or I think or anyone thinks. It's clear that Okoro, when they put him on Banchero in one game and the next game he's on Zach LaVine and the next game he's on Jalen Brunson, the Bulls think he's their best defender, the most versatile defender. I think that's true. We can argue and throw out all the advanced statistics you want, but when he's off the court, this team is horrific defensively. It just is. And Trey Jones is not a better defender than Isaac Okoro. We got one plus defender on this team. That's Isaac. I always been, I think, somewhat disappointing this year defensively. Great on the offensive end, but he's also had some issues. And, you know, it's bad enough that we have a horrible interior defense. But when you're giving up straight line drives, essentially, like Javon Carter did in Q2 and then also Trey Jones, you're just going to lose. You're just going to get destroyed unless you're hitting threes at a high level, and they weren't. Vooch, Pat Williams, and Herter are 3 allegedly best 3-point shooters on the team for that game outside of Kobe. We're all 0 for 4. They were 0 for 12 combined from 3. You can't win when you have that type of defense combined with that lack of 3-point shooting, period. Let's see you.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you've said there. Like, it just...
Do you think Trey Jones is a better defender than Okoro?
I mean, I don't know if he's better, like, not against bigger players.
He can't guard anybody over 215 pounds. The issue is, again, they're just setting picks. It's pick and roll. It's obvious what they're trying to do.
I think Trey Jones is solid. I don't think he's better than Okoro, like, because he's just much less versatile, right? Like, so it's just easier to peel him off. And he's at a much larger disadvantage if you do a switch, right? than Okoro is. Like, if you switch Okoro onto a big guy, you know, like, not like Okoro's going to be great at guarding a center, but, you know, he's strong, he's athletic, he's still got some length. You know, he can still kind of hold his own a little bit, and Trey Jones really can't. So, yeah, I mean, I think Okoro's a better defender than Trey Jones. I mean, obviously, Trey Jones is just a much better player than Okoro, though. Like, he's so much better on offense. He can do so much more for you. So, but yeah, well, just for only looking at defense, then.
Yeah, Trey Jones is, I did highlight, he's the last five games, his three-pointer has fallen off a cliff. He's one, I think he's made one three-pointer in the last five games. And, you know, that's problematic, too, for a team that doesn't have a lot of good shooters. Coral's 50, 40, 90 in the last nine games. So he's been fine on the offensive end. And he doesn't take a lot of shots. He needs to be more aggressive. I understand all that. We don't need to get onto the side road here. The other guy that we don't really talk about a lot on the defensive end is Buzelis. And people are like, lost their minds. Why he didn't play against the Spurs? Yeah, the Spurs had double bigs out there. I mean, I love Buzelis. He's not big, and he gained all this weight, you know, from last year. He's not strong or big enough yet. He still isn't. And if he's going to be your four, I don't think he's got enough lateral quickness to play the three. He's a four, and he's still not strong enough. And if they're going to go double big, he can't be on the court. I'm sorry. You could throw him out there, but you're going to get destroyed on the boards and killed on the boards. And Wemby was going off. They had no choice. You had to go kind of combat that with more beef. And he's really struggling in defensive end. I'm shocked people aren't seeing this. His game against Cleveland was terrible. I thought against the Pistons, he did have a nice, like, line. He scored well, but he had two of the dumbest turnovers in the fourth, just dribbling turnovers. The guy just takes it from him. And I don't think he's played well. Like, he's had a couple of nice scoring games. He's 21. I understand he's young. I know there's all these issues with that. But we got to also be realistic. Like, people are all over Billy for not playing him. He didn't deserve the play. On the defensive end, he's been really poor lately. What say you?
I mean, like, compared to what?
Patrick Williams?
Compared to Jalen Smith? Compared to Patrick Williams? Compared to Nikola Vucevic? Which one of those three guys do you think has been good? Every time Patrick Williams dribbles the ball, it's like a turnover. Like, anytime he puts the ball. So saying that Matas Buzelis had a couple of bad turnovers, yeah. Every time Patrick Williams touches the ball, it's a freaking turnover. Nikola Vucevic, like, his shooting, like, fell off the earth. He has been just god freaking awful. Which, whatever, he's 35, he's a role player. Like, I know I'm leading the I hate Vucevic charge, like, for most of the last few years. I don't care about him at all now. Expiring deal, he's going to be gone next year. He chews up minutes. But, like, he's been an absolute train wreck. He's a disaster. You think he was, okay, he's beefy. What did that get you? Nothing.
He was terrible.
Got you no nothing. Doubt. He's yeah. terrible. So he was terrible. Jalen Smith is, like, also a turnover machine and is terrible. So, yeah.
I don't think he's been terrible.
Oh, he's been up and down. He's had games where he looked okay, but, like, he's also awful in a lot of games. And so, yeah, I agree that, like, Matas isn't, like, he's not playing at the star level that people sometimes think he is, because he's got some, like, really positive stat lines offensively at times, and his defense definitely needs work, and, like, some of the things you say are true. But you're compared to our other options, like, I don't think he's been worse than any of our other options, and clearly we need him to be good, like, in the long run. And so, yeah, I would play him. I would play him over Patrick Williams. I would play him over Jalen Smith. I don't care. Like, oh, they went beefy with freaking Luke Kornet. Who cares? Like, all right, Luke Kornet's beefy. I'm not, like, Luke Kornet's not, like, some super elite player, and he was just destroying us. There's just, like, alley-oops and whatever. Just because no one paid attention to him, and he was just going to the basket. It wasn't like, oh, like, you think if you just had Matas on Luke Kornet, they're going to be like, let's run an ISO for Luke Kornet in the post. No, he was just getting opportunity baskets. It wasn't like you just had to kind of stay near him. That's it. So, yeah, no, I would have played Matas too. I mean, I'm not going to lose my mind over it for whatever reason. Like, people lose their mind over it. But, no, I think it would have been the right decision to play him. Like, I don't think Luke Kornet is the second beefy guy is the thing you're like, oh, we got it. We just can't let them keep Kornet on the floor. Like, he's just going to run over everyone. Like, no, you don't have to worry about that, dude. Get out of here.
I guess, let me just put it this way. On the defensive end, they had a lead, and I just understand Billy's thinking that who's our best defender against fours on this team? To me, all his faults are fair. Patrick Williams is our best defender against fours.
I would have had Mattis in there. I mean, like,
maybe you're right.
Let me rephrase it this way. Who is a better player right now, today?
No doubt Mattis is better.
So put the better player in, because you know what we also needed? Someone who could score a basket. Like our offense looked just terrible. Like, you're up by 6 points. Instead of saying, like, oh, what is our best defensive option? Maybe your thought instead is like, yeah, they're going to score. We need to score too. Because we didn't stop them anyway. You know, like, they just scored every time down the floor anyway. And so maybe your thought was, we need to score too. And if we can score too, then we're going to do fine.
That's what I used to tell Tibbs about Korver. But you're right. That's a good point. It's a fair point. And, it's like almost a no-win situation with how bad the interior defense is. And I think we're really going to struggle now, because the word is kind of like out, and you just see it in every game how teams are attacking us. And there's nothing we can do until we get better personnel, period, on that defensive end. And then you're sacrificing, I always say, Vooch's value is tied to how he hits a three, essentially. Like, I brought up the point that Vooch, Pat Williams, and Herter were all 0 for 4, 0 for 12 combined from our three best three-point shooters against the Pistons. This was a team that for the first half of the season was sitting top five in NBA three-point percentage. And when your three key floor spacers can't hit a shot out there, that's like a massive issue. It's a massive red flag. Everything we do offensively in terms of attacking the rim, our entire offensive structure is dependent on those threes falling. And if we suddenly become a poor three-point shooting team, those driving lanes are going to disappear. Now, Kobe's return is absolutely going to help. He's got more gravity than anybody on the team. And, you know, the great rim presenter, you're right, it's just struggled last five games. He's shooting 31% from three. Last five games, he's last four losses, 37, 35, 25. That's his stats. He's gotten to the free throw line four times in four games. So Paul Reed ended any talk of him being an all-star. All that nonsense is over. He played really well for the first couple games, but he's been terrible for the last five. You know, it is what it is. You're right.
Yeah, he's 35. He's 35. He's also making $20 million a year. Like, let's not pretend like the only reason anyone cares about this dude is because he was an all-star at one point. We traded a lot to get him, and people think he is still a name for some reason. That's it. Like, no one cares about Zach Collins in the same. Like, Zach Collins makes $2 million a year less. No one's like, oh, Zach Collins has got to get the ball. Like, you know, if Zach Collins has to play minutes, like, there's no reason to think more of Vooch than Zach Collins. They make the same money. They have the same contract. Like,
well, that's why
guys are just role players. Like, that's it. Like, and so, you know, when you look at a $20 million role player, like, yeah, he's going to have some good days and some bad days. And, you know, to your point, when Vooch shoots well, it can help you a lot. And I'm sure we're going to get more days where Vooch shoots well. Like, I don't think he's just going to be terrible shooting every game. So we're going to get some days where he comes and he helps, and he's going to defensively rebound, and he's going to do role player things. And if you think about him, like, pretend he's the sixth best guy in the team, and like, focus your expectations of, like, what would your sixth best guy do, then I think Vooch is fine. Like, you know, those guys sometimes have bad games. Like, Io, sometimes he gives you a good game, sometimes he gives you a bad game. You know, like, there's some things he can do consistently, but, like, his shot might not be consistent. Sometimes he may not, you know, contribute in other ways. And that's what you get out of players in that tier. And that's just where Vooch is. So it's like, I don't want to, like, destroy him, you know, for, like, whatever. Like, he's just not a great player, and we just should have no expectations otherwise.
Well, that's, I think, where a lot of people, and I think are fairly critical of Billy, is look at the Pistons game. They get destroyed with him on the court. They go to this small lineup, which is essentially, I think it was Herter, Okoro, I think Io was out there, maybe Trey Jones, Patrick Williams, I believe. That whole lineup made a great run to cut this huge lead to one. I mean, they were playing fantastic with that small lineup. Vooch comes back in, suddenly up to 20 again. Like, why does he have to play? Like, you had the gall to, like, sit Zach in against the game against the Orlando Magic a few years ago, which allegedly ruptured your relationship with Zach. Why don't you just do it to Vooch? Why does this guy always have to close, even when he's not playing well? It's frustrating as hell. It's like, I like the idea of putting Williams at the five against some smaller lineups, Buzelis, Okoro, Io. You know, put your great combination of your best offensive players and defensive players and go small. And he just doesn't want to do it. It's like, it's always the same thing. Like, he's coming in no matter what. And that's where I do get frustrated with Billy, and I think that Pistons game might have been different if he just said, you know, screw it, I'm not going to play with a center. You know, I'm just going to play with a four at the center, and we'll see, we'll roll like that. Anyhow.
I feel the same way.
Any thoughts on it?
I don't feel that crazy about it now, only because I don't think the other options are that good now. Like, I don't know, like anytime you get a decent minute out of Patrick Williams at the five, I feel like you just got lucky. So I just, like, like, it's not like the other options are so great, but when Zach Collins is back, if Vooch is playing bad and we don't go with Collins down the stretch, I'll be pretty annoyed. So, I feel like all the other options now are super inconsistent and not really fit for purpose, but when Zach Collins is back, I really hope that we're willing to be like, oh, Vooch is off tonight, you know, 18 minutes. And that's it. You know, like, I hope we're willing to do that in days where it's like, yeah, he's not shooting, they're scoring all over him. You know, like, let's play Collins 30 minutes tonight. Like, I hope that's a thing we'll do, but I don't have a lot of faith in that either, just between you and me, but I hope that's a thing we'll be willing to do. And until that option is at least on the table, I totally get why we'd be like, yeah, we're just going to play this guy. Because even if he's playing bad, like, I'm more confident that Vooch will just hit a couple threes at the end of the game than I am that Patrick Williams is going to do something. You know, like, I don't necessarily always believe in, like, oh, this guy's having a good night, this guy's having a bad night. Like, you can be having a good night, and then, you know, the next 10 minutes, I don't think that means your next 10 minutes are going to be good. You know, sometimes there's a little bit of shooter's touch, but, like, yeah, if Patrick Williams was, like, 7-for-7 from three and just doing all his crazy stuff, sure. But, like, that's usually not how it goes, right? Like, so I think that's my thought. Like, I'm not worried about it now because I think the other options are bad. And even at the end of the game, even if he's played poorly for most of the game, I'd still probably have more faith in Vooch than Jalen Smith or Patrick Williams at center. But once we have Zach Collins as an option, that's no longer true. Like, I think Zach Collins is generally a little bit better of a player with different strengths. And at least they're like a toss-up. And so if Vooch is bad and we have the option for Collins, then I think we should use it.
There's no doubt, no debate, he's a better interior defender than Vucevic. So on that alone, when you have such a massive hole there, he's got to play. And I do take a little solace in the fact that Vooch's minutes are down. Like, he's playing like 28 minutes a game, which is pretty below 30, I think, would be the first time. I'm doing this out of memory, so I don't know for sure.
I think that's true. I looked up the same thing the other day. Where someone was arguing about it, and he is over 30. He's over 30 this year.
Oh, he's over. Oh, are you kidding me? I thought he was under 20.
All right, I've pulled it up. He's 30.8, so just a shade over 30. His last few years, since he got to the Bulls, were 33.1, 33.5, 34.3, and 31.2. So, you know, trending down a teeny bit. But also, like I said, when Zach Collins is back and you have a real other option, I think that's going to look a little different. Like right now, there just isn't a lot of other options. And, you know, if I want to, it's weird being the one not slandering Vooch for a change. You know, one of the things about him is he can actually give you 30 minutes a game consistently and stay healthy. And that's something a lot of centers don't do. And yeah, he's got a lot of flaws, but, you know, he can still contribute in a reasonable amount of ways. You know, he'll have days where he's shooting really well, and that really helps you out a lot. You know, he'll have days where he's passing pretty well. And so, you know, I'm kind of like, as long as we are willing to play Collins more when Collins is here, I will be, you know, pretty happy with that as an option to be like, yeah, okay, Vooch, you're playing 20 minutes tonight. Remains to be seen if we'll do that. But I feel like we could.
Again, overall, he's still shooting 44% from three. He's been good this year, like, overall. It's just that now you're seeing the last three games. I made this argument. Maybe he's kind of Giddy dependent, especially in the offensive end. Like, maybe Giddy is the guy. He does get a lot of drop offs and little, you know, yeah, little points at the rim that aren't his doing. They're usually caused by people, you know, aggressive drive by Giddy or et cetera. You know what I mean?
One of the things I said, like, over the years with him is you got to stop using him in the post. You know, he's way better when he's in motion. When you have him set a pick and you have him roll or you have him do whatever, like, you got to get him, like, moving. And then it's like, because he's skilled, right? Like, so if you're able to create an advantage through your offense for him where he gets the ball in motion, he's, like, really skilled at then finishing. But when you just try to like have him back people down and run the offense through him, he's not that good. And with Giddey, they're basically running no post offense for him. It's all that stuff where he's moving and he's been really good. And without Giddey, then you start rolling back the classic Vooch. And then like his whole game feels like it falls apart. Maybe even his shooting is bad when he's trying to play more of a post game because he's like physically backing guys down and blah, blah, blah. And when he's running more of this cut game, you know, it's like kind of like your legs are a little warmer when you're all like bouncing your step, running through things, and you're used to making movements, and you're, instead of getting like pounded in your back, like, you know, guys like throwing weight against you, and you know, it's like a different toll on your body. Maybe that is also a little bit to do with how he shoots. Like when he's not getting kind of like physically beaten around so much, that makes his shooting more consistent too. Could just be random.
That's a good theory.
Totally random variance is probably more likely than that explanation. But, you know, it's just an interesting thing to think about. Either way, I think he's like way more successful when you aren't trying to play him in this classic slow down, toss him the ball in the post. And when you just kind of like keep him in motion, you get him a little bit of an advantage off a pick and roll where they're not sure what to do. And you've got a really creative passer in there that can like thread the needle and get him the ball in a really good spot. I think he's done really great in those spots, and yeah, without Giddey, he's not getting those types of opportunities, and then we've seen the offense start to fall off, and that's probably true of like any big man, right? Like most big men are not Shaq. Most big men are really kind of rely on having a good passer, and that's one of the things, you know, that Giddey really brings to the table that helps the team.
Yeah, and the other point, finally, comment on Vooch, I will say, is like there's a lot of people saying, oh, you got to get him the ball more in the post with a mismatch. And I agree. I don't think the Bulls are good at that. And that's the only time I want Vooch in the post is when there is a pick and roll or whatever, and he gets a small guy on him, or let's say they're fast breaking and he's got a smaller guard on him. I can't tell you how many times this year he's passed out of those options. Like it drives me nuts where he's in the post and he's got a guard on him and he's throwing it out. Like, dude,
he's not good. He's not good at that shot. Like just historically, he just isn't. Like that I think is that's like kind of what I said. Like it's like people think this is what he's good at, but it's not. Like it just isn't what he's good at. Like even when he doesn't have good defenders, he's not good when he has to back down a player and do a thing. And if you keep thinking he is, like I just think that is not a recipe for success with him.
Before we get into a little bit bigger NBA picture, because it is relevant to the Bulls, I did want to say Wemby. Like, if Wemby's going to hit threes like he did against the Bulls, this is over, man. That was one of the most freaking impressive performances I've ever seen against a Bulls team. When he's knocking down threes like that, and then yesterday I watched I don't know if you had a chance to watch the Golden State. The Golden State won by one in San Antonio yesterday. It was one of the best games I've ever seen. Curry had 49 points, 9 threes. Insane. I was watching it by myself, just screaming. My son was asleep and Ann was working on something. And I'm just like, this is incredible basketball. I was just going nuts. Wemby, I don't even know what to say. Just say Wemby and then let it sit, because the guy, it's amazing. It's just freaking amazing. Every time I watch him, he had a block on Butler at the end of the game yesterday. It's like no one in the league could do that but him on a fast break. Incredible player. I just love watching him, and it's a shame he's not in Chicago. But we had to go for 40 wins that year. Let's move on to this AD information. So Nico Harrison gets fired, rightly so. One of the worst trades in history. Do you want any final comments on that dopey trade? Like, oh my God.
Does there need to be any comments about it? I mean, like, I don't know that there doesn't. If you wanted like the really quick comment, the worst thing is that like he just didn't negotiate with the league. Because he knew if he negotiated with the league that he would just be destroyed. Like you'd be thrown under the bus and everyone would hate him and everyone would say, this is terrible. And like you should know, like,
that's how it ended anyhow.
If I'm so scared to even tell anyone I'm doing this because I know no one will let me do it if it comes out that I'm trying to do it, that's probably a pretty good sign you shouldn't do it. But it's like, even if you traded Luka and you were like, you know what, I don't like this guy, he's out of shape, he's like, you know, whatever, and maybe even Luka, we'll just say, sake of argument, that was all true, and he was never going to be better in Dallas because of whatever, and it required him to go somewhere else to actually be like, wow, maybe I should kind of exercise and stay in shape. Even in that very generous like set of assumptions, all you had to do was negotiate with the whole league and just get the max return, right? Like you should have gotten so much more than you got. And so it's like, even if I give you the most generous view possible of this situation, and I agreed with you about all this other stuff about, you know, you still just, you could have negotiated this and you didn't. So anyway, and then he tweeted like, now you see the whole plan when they won the lottery with like their 1.8% odds. It's like, oh, our plan was to get super lucky. Like, yeah, anyway. All right. Yeah. That's enough about that.
Yeah, forget it. Let's not talk about that. But now it looks like, obviously, Dallas is going in a different direction, rightly so. They're terrible. AD is available, likely. He's going to be available. He's not. They're doing a full rebuild. They need to be bad this year in a loaded draft. They're going to move him. First of all, with the current salary structures, I've been going through it. There's not a lot of teams that can just take him on, you know, just due to the mechanics of the cap. The Bulls are a team that can absolutely bring him in. A lot of talk. I've been somewhat surprised at the general negativity with the idea, considering how good he is as an interior defender and how bad our interior defense is. And I don't think it would take a lot to get him. I really don't. What say you? Number one, are you for it? And if so, what would you move in order to get him?
I think so. Part of this is like with almost anything, it's always like, oh, how much does it cost? Right? Like, you know me, I'm like every... So AD is definitely good enough where he's a player that has value at the right price. So we'll start with that as like our start opening...
So you want him.
Our opening salvo is at the right price, I would take AD. And so now your question is, what is, in fact, the right price? And to me, he is a high probability of being a bad contract, right? Like, he's going to make $60 million in 3 years. That's probably got one of the top, like, five salaries in the league or something like that. I don't know. So I would be willing to give up Vooch, Patrick Williams, because he's also a bad contract, but younger and maybe more appealing to Dallas. Then the Portland pick and our 2026 pick, and then maybe you got to throw in Javon Carter to make the salaries work. I'd be willing to do that.
Okay. All right, let's stop here for 1 second. Let's go back to his contract. That's part of the reason I don't think you're going to get Dallas is going to get too much for him.
Yeah,
for sure. He's signed for one more year. He has a player option in the following year for like, what, $60 million? So it's some insane amount. So right away, when you're taking him on, he's probably going to want some type of extension or commitment, I would assume. And at his age, like, I'd be highly against that. My plan would be take him and he plays out his contract. We'll see. We'll talk at the end of the contract. And we'll deal with all the ramifications, all the other stuff about it. I would be willing to bet that he's going to play, even if he is upset. Because every game he doesn't is going to hurt that next contract. And he's going to be upset. He's going to cry and he's going to say, I want an extension.
I don't think that's going to matter. I think the extension thing's not even a piece of this conversation.
Okay, fair enough. I think it is with him. I think he's going to want
that. Well, he might regardless. Want it. No one would give it to him. He's going to be like 36. When this contract's over, no one's giving you an extension now.
Hold on a second.
He's 33. He's 33 now. So it's like 34 and 35 are the years he'll play. So it'd be like 36 on that new deal. No one's going to give him this much money, especially right now. He's not healthy. He's not even on the court right now. So 0% chance that's going to happen that way.
But what I'm saying that you got to leverage that because he's going to want an extension, period, and you're going to say no.
Again, extension's not even a topic, dude. No one is going to be talking. He's got two more seasons after this season. No one is talking extension right now.
His contract is not going to help him be moved. Just put it that way. So that's a negative. It's actually a negative. From the Dallas viewpoint, they would want expiring deals just to get him off the cap and just be bad this year. So that's the advantage. What are they going to expect in return? I'd absolutely give them the Portland pick. Who knows when that's going to ever come around? So that's not, to me, not even really good. I kind of do feel he's worth at least one first round pick. I'd rather not give it to him this year. I'd rather give it to him the following year. I'd absolutely do it. I'm kind of shocked how many people are against it. I will say, Doug, I don't want him to trade Vooch. And the reason why is because I think Davis has always wanted to be a four. And I think the team would be better with him as a four. Vooch, if he can still serve as a stretch five, that's one thing that Davis doesn't do is stretch the floor. I think they would be good together, Vooch and Davis. I think they would help each other out. We're suddenly big. We're suddenly much better on the interior. I really think this would work. I think it would work really well, provided he's healthy for the playoffs. That's all that matters. Haven't played 40 games. I don't care. the regular season doesn't matter as much as this guy in the playoffs. And suddenly you got a guy that can actually defend the rim, and suddenly you got a guy that can actually cover all that ails us. Like, I think he's a fit too. Do you agree with that statement?
This statement, I mean, I disagree with, I would throw Vooch in the trade. I like that one single piece of what you said. I disagree with.
Why do you want Vooch out?
Because he sucks, like, and he's not going to be here.
Okay. But that's part of the deal. He gets expiring off the deal.
Keep Collins and Jalen Smith as your centers. I'm fine with that. Like, I don't want Vooch as my center. I would rather have Collins still playing center.
That's a good call. I'd rather have Collins.
But it doesn't matter.
He doesn't give the stretch.
I don't care. I don't trust Vooch to stretch the floor either with any consistency. And I also just, anyway, I don't care. That's not a deal breaker to me one way or the other. Let me just leave it at that. Like, if someone was like, no, we need Collins, we're not going to take Vooch, I'd also be like, okay, that's fine. Like, I'm not like, oh, no, not Collins. Like, so however you make the salaries work, I would be fine doing it. Yeah, I would do the trade. And
would you do it if Kobe White was included?
No. Here's,
I agree.
Here's this way I want to approach this. Like, a thought I have for you. And, you know, let me know what you think of this thought. So when you're looking at how the Bulls can go from being where they are to a contender, you're nowhere near a contender, right? In terms of assets on the team, in terms of total team quality right now. Like, you need way better players than you have, right? We do not have the talent of a team that can win the title right now. Would you agree with that statement?
I don't agree with it.
Okay, so one, you're completely wrong. We have nowhere near the talent to win a title. Get out of here. Like, title teams, okay, never mind. I don't even want to argue with you about it because it's just
everyone. Let me just state this. What are the most important things to have to win a title? You got to have those guys. Is it possible that Giddey and Kobe are two of the guys that can be part of a title
team? It's not possible.
I think Giddey is showing
a lot. Nope. Not even close. All right. So just hear me out for a second then. Let's assume for a second I'm right. Okay. You can disagree because I know you're C-Red Fred and all. But let's assume for a second that we're right. And we actually need a good influx of talent. Like, we need more total talent on this team. We're not just moving the deck chairs around into better fitting deck chairs to win a title. Like, we actually need an influx of talent. If you need a big influx of talent, what other ways you can do that? So one, you can draft that talent, right? And if you draft that talent, it's probably going to take a few years to develop. You probably need to get really lucky, either lucky in the lottery by winning or lucky in getting a player that just vastly outperforms their position. You could sign that talent in free agency. There's no good free agents coming up this year, so we're not going to do that unless we sign a guy like, say, the next Jalen Smith, except then after we sign him, he becomes like super amazing. Say like Isaiah Thomas to the Celtics. Like several years, like probably a decade ago now, where like they signed
Jalen Brunson.
Jalen Brunson, yeah, great example. Like a guy who's like, okay, he was kind of good, and then he just became a star afterwards. That's like super rare. It almost never happens. The next thing is you can trade for a guy, and so you start thinking about. But if you trade for a guy, like say Giannis, you trade for Giannis, but then you give up like four first round picks, three swaps, you know, Noah Senge, Modest Buzelis, and like whatever, and Kobe White. And it's like now, yeah, you traded for him and Giannis is great, but you have nothing left, right? Like you've watched these star trades come, and most of the time, the cost to get the guy is so high, you just can't do anything afterwards. Like that's the typical thing. And maybe there's some exception to that. If the guy is like, I'm Giannis, I think Giannis has one more year left under contract. So I have no pressure now to do it. But like, if he's like, I'm going to be expiring at the end of the year, I will only go to Chicago. If you trade me to anywhere else, I will refuse to sign an extension. And then no one's going to give you anything. And now he can force his way to a specific spot for less than they would get otherwise. Maybe you get one of those scenarios, but like, what superstar is going to be like Chicago and nowhere else? None. No one's going to do that. There's not been a star that has put us on, even on their list of five teams. In the last like, 7 years. No, I mean, like, since the AK era. And Paul Gasol is nowhere near a superstar. Come on, get out of here. Great pickup, but nowhere near a superstar. Anyway, like, no superstar has put us on their list. Like, Kevin Durant, like, Damian Lillard, like, the guys who've been moved. Like, just, we've never been on this. So that option's out. And so then you think, like, what's your other option? You trade for a guy who is maybe available for way less than their peak market value. You know, because there's some risk involved that they're just going to suck and be a bad contract. And I'm going to say, like, Anthony Davis is now in this group. Zion Williamson is in this group. Zach LaVine was maybe a guy who was in that group. And so, like, there's this huge risk of, like, you know, Zach LaVine's risk a different way of like, is this guy actually any good? Does he make win, help you win? Or does he just score or whatever? You know, Anthony Davis and Zion are in this list of like, yeah, I know they're really good, but can they actually be healthy and whatever? And so there's different risks with those guys. But that's kind of then like your thought is like, all right, well, I can take one of these guys and they're available and I can get them and the cost isn't so high. If I trade for Anthony Davis, I still have Josh Giddey and I still have Kobe White and I still have Ayo Dosunmu and I still have like all these other good players on the roster to put around that guy. And now I have to hope Anthony Davis stays healthy and like there's a good chance he won't and there's a good chance he won't be that good and there's a good chance it's not going to work out. But you're at a point where you have to take some type of big unexpected like gain is going to come onto this team. And so of those things, like Anthony Davis is a chance where it's like, yeah, you can see where it's, you know, he's played an average of 60 games over the last 3 years. It's like people are acting like he's played like 30 games a year. It was like 54, 72, I think, and 51 or something, or 74, whatever. It averaged out to 60 games over the last 3 years. He's played great while healthy all three of those years. And so like, yeah, there's risk that this is not going to work out, but there's risk that there's a chance that it can. Right? Like if he gave you 60 games this year, 60 games next year, and played really great during those 60 games, and he's healthy in the playoffs, like you could do something. Like you could really do something this year. Like you could make it to the finals this year if you got Anthony Davis for like Vucevic and Patrick Williams and picks. And then like what if it doesn't work out and Anthony Davis just sucks and he's hurt and it just completely falls apart. Like, all right, you've got him on your books for 3 years and then maybe your team ends up bad, but we're probably not going to be that great anyway. We're on the path to win like low 40s. And we gave up two mid-round first round picks, right? Like that Portland pick is lotto protected forever. And you know, your 26th pick this year, you'll have high confidence of what that pick will be at the time you trade it. And so like, you're not giving up. You're not selling the farm. Like if it doesn't work out, you've not like put yourself in this position like Phoenix where it's like, well, we don't have a first round pick for 7 years. Like, no, like, okay, well, you still have your, if your team just sucks, well, we still have our 27 pick, our 28 pick, our 29 pick. So if we end up being really bad, you know, we move Josh Giddey and then we just go back towards the draft and, you know, like whatever. So like, I just think it's like one of these moves where it's like, you're kind of risking, you're just saying, we're going to try this for the next 2 years. And if it doesn't work out, oh well. You know, we still will have all our draft picks. We'll still have all of our other stuff going forward after 2026. And so if the price is that, I just feel like, yeah, the risk reward is there. Like, I'm not saying, oh wow, it's totally going to work. Like, there's huge risk. But there's a chance. And there's so few things you can do right now that give you a legitimate chance. And this is one of them.
So how did you phrase the first part of the question? Because maybe I misunderstood a little bit. I think you said, do we have the talent on the current roster to win a title?
Yeah. Is our total talent level on the roster high enough to win a title? Like if you were just to say like, here's our total talent level and you put us up against OKC, could we win? Like their total talent level is so much higher than ours.
No.
And like same with the other teams. Right. And so you have to figure a way, how do you increase the total talent level? And that is, you need to find some way to get more than your expected return. And that involves taking risk. Right? Like it involves taking risk. So that's what it is. And this is a risk you could take where there's very clear upside if it works. There's reason to think his market value is heavily depressed compared to what it should be. And that's why it's a chance you could take. May not work out, but that's why it could work.
Here's why I think the move has to be made now. Josh Giddey is 23 years old. He is signed for 4 years at $25 million. This is your window. He's averaging 21.4 points. 9 assists and 9 rebounds per game. Is it out of the realm of possibility that Josh Giddey is going to put up those numbers for the next 4 years every year? No, it's not. He did it in March. He's continued now. He's played at a high enough level that number one, he's an all-star period this year. And number two, he's 23. These next 4 years, that's your window. You have an all-star player making role player money. You have to make it happen now. You don't wait for Modest to develop. You don't wait and maybe develop into an all-star. Like, you have to move now. Kobe White, player of the month in March. Now, he's going to be paid a lot more next year. But I think it's possible you could build a title team around Anthony Davis, Kobe White, and Josh Giddey. I think that can happen. So, is it likely? No. But I think that's our best shot at a title. Like, I would not be surprised if Anthony Davis comes to the Bulls, that the Bulls end up getting out of the East this year. They are deep enough. Of course, there's a big caveat. Davis has to be healthy, but every major issue with the Bulls, with the exception of three-point shooting, and that's not even an issue with the team as it is, as it currently stands. It may be if Vooch continues to fall off the cliff. But it's all-around interior defense. You can't find a star in the league who's realistically available who would be a better answer than Anthony Davis. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, am I missing somebody? Who are you going to get that's a better defender who can play for you this year?
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I think that's a risk worth taking, especially if we're talking about really relative guys that probably won't even be on the roster next year. You put it very well. Let's just say they get it. Let's say this happens. What team are you afraid of? Like, them not being with Anthony Davis healthy playing. I really think they could compete for the Eastern Conference Championship and be there this year.
If you did that trade and it cost what we just described, then yes. I think you would be, if Anthony Davis is healthy, you would be one of the top three teams in the East. And, you know, you'd be right there with them. And it would just, you know, who knows? Like, I don't think we would definitely get out, but we would be one of the teams with a legit chance at it. And we'd see how it happens. But again, like, it could totally go against you. Like, Anthony Davis could just suck and be hurt all the time and be in street clothes and whatever. Like, that's a totally legit possibility. I'm not underselling that there's risk here. It's just like, you don't have a lot of things that have reward. So if you're like looking at things that have reward, this has legit reward. And that's what I would say about it.
In addition to it, if they're going to take Patrick Williams off this roster, like that's a positive.
Yeah.
Getting him off the roster.
The flip side though is Dallas may be like, nah, we need more than that. We're not doing this. Like, and if they, you know, if they're like, yeah, also throw a Noah Senge in your 2028 pick. And I'd be like, yeah, no, I'm kind of okay. You know, like I'm not going to give you future picks out after these. The only picks I would give up in this are the 2026 ones. Depending, I don't know like so much about Asenge, so like it's hard for me to say, but I would maybe consider throwing him in there too, depending on the other pieces of the trade. Like, he's not doing anything for us this year, and I'm not sure how much I believe in his upside. So I'd probably maybe be willing to toss him in.
That'd be a tough one, man. I mean, because he obviously had a great performance in his first game for Windy City. We've seen that before from players.
Did you watch the highlights of him in that game? I mean, like, there's like no negative. I only saw the highlights, and they're only offensive highlights. I saw like the YouTube ones, so I didn't get to see anything he did on defense, one way or the other. I clearly didn't watch the game. Just watching him, and I didn't know a ton about him. But it reminded me how groundbound he is. He's like really lanky and he's long, but he's not like an athletic leaper. Like in my head, I keep like going back to like, he's going to be like Modest Bozelles. He's going to be this like really super athletic guy. Like he's not like a super athletic guy. Like he's kind of like a, maybe he's pretty good East West. You know, he's like super lanky, just dribbling into traffic, drawing contact and, you know, but like he's kind of like an at the rim player in this game. Like I can't think of like many times I saw him where his hand was like above the rim on all of his shots. And so, and like not a natural shooter or anything. So yeah, we'll see. Like as a guy who's supposed to be a defensive Swiss Army knife. Yeah. But as a guy who's supposed to be this crazy defender, like to not be what looks like a quick leaper or like someone who plays with a lot of like height and verticality, like, I don't know. It's hard for me to see. Like if he's not also a really good offensive player, it's hard for me to see how he's just going to be this like super defensive wizard. And I still like him, but like watching him, I'm like, yeah, I don't think this is like the super upside guy that like I can't let go. That's all.
Yeah, I would concur. Like if it comes down to it, I would rather trade him and keep the 2026 pick.
I'd rather have the 2026 pick. But I would rather trade Asenge than give up the 28 pick.
I don't think you should. This trade should demand. They might want it, and then I'd say no. But if they're going to say it's either the Blazers pick and a number one, or the Blazers pick and Asenge, everything else we keep. And if you're able to get Anthony Davis for Asenge and the Blazers pick, and you have every first round pick from here to Kingdom Come, I think you got to do that, dude. Especially with the 4 years here where you got Giddy at $25 million per year. End of story. Anyhow, On that note, I got to bring the big red bus in. We're at 50 minutes. DT, it's always good to talk to you. It's not as a joyful one, but I'm glad that we're both kind of simpatico. I'm frankly shocked at how many people are totally against bringing in Anthony Davis outside of you, me, and Will Gottlieb. And, you know, therefore, when it's those bright lights are in agreement with me, I know I'm on the right side. And then, of course, Marquez against it, so you know it's right. Right. So, right. Anyhow, on those notes, until next time, let's go. Oh, yeah. One more thing. Anything else going on with you? Oh, I did want to bring this up, dude. Did you hear my shoot the three?
I did not.
That was a. Yeah, are you kidding me? Oh, my God. I wrote. Anyway, check out my parody songs. I got two Bulls. Well, there's one Bulls parody song out there, but I got one coming out about Boylan and Heinrich in the next 2 weeks. I'm finally devoting the time. With the help of the University of Northeast Idaho.
This is the timely music people need, is a song about Boylan and Heinrich. Like, let's just bring back songs. I got another one about Rip. Like, when was Heinrich last with the Bulls? When was Heinrich last with the Bulls?
Well, this song was written in 2009 during the year when Rose was first here.
Yeah.
So it goes all the way back.
So we're only 16 years late with this song.
I talk about Bulls history through the majesty of song. Anyhow, check it out. It's on all platforms. You can go to See Red Fred. And then I got two original songs from the band days that ended in the little person fight. And then also the two songs. You could tell the See Red Fred logo are Bulls related. Shoot the three. My message to Patrick Williams. Anyhow, take it out. Check it out. Tell me what you think.
Sounds great.
Until next time, let's bring the big red bus in. Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.